Captain's log, stardate 4842.46. After a long and sexy summer of covering nothing but dance films, the crew is excited to get back to the world of Star Trek with Season 3's The Paradise Syndrome. I have instructed Lieutenant Mike and First Officer Jaggy to watch their step while reviewing this episode, lest they find themselves waking up in a dark room with odd-looking machinery, asking themselves, "This is not my beautiful starship. This is not my Native American wife. How did I get here?"
In the not-too-distant future of the neo-post-apocalypse, a group of movie fans, led by their charismatic but oafish leader Dave, bring the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Once the asteroid has been diverted...
That may be hours from now.
In that case, everyone on this planet will die, including the captain.
Lock all phases on that mark.
You lost for us, you lost for that planet, and you lost for Jim.
We are your people. We've been waiting for you to come to us.
I say he must prove he is a god.
Many things are strange to me.
Miramani, come here.
Bear your child.
I cannot permit this joining.
You are a god.
Fire! Get up!
There's the false one!
No! No!
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. I am your host and captain, Dave. I'm joined again by First Officer, Jackie.
I don't have a quote, I'm sorry. I was too busy staring at this obelisk.
You must get sleep, Jackie. You haven't slept in weeks.
This obelisk, though.
Put down that flute. Or no, what was it? It was a...
There was a flute, wasn't there? I recall a flute. Is that not right?
I feel like Kirok right now. I can't remember the name of the instrument that Spock has.
It's a Vulcan thing. He loves his little flute. Anyway.
Well, I think he has a flute, but it's not what he has in this one. What is it? That's gonna drive me nuts right now. I am Kirok right now. I can't remember the name of this like well-known instrument.
This is exactly as frustrated as Kirok felt.
Seriously. Well, at some point in the episode, it's going to come to me, but I'm also joined by Lieutenant Michael.
I am Kirok. I have come. I am Kirok.
Mike, stop hugging yourself and get to work, okay? Get to work remembering the name of that instrument that Spock plays. It's going to bug me all episode, mister. Well, The Paradise Syndrome, Season 3... Episode 3. This was a Mike pick. This was a Kirok pick. And I gotta say, like, I've said this before, I haven't seen all of Season 3 of Star Trek. I've seen most of it, but this was one I have seen before, The Paradise Syndrome. And as soon as the episode started and they beamed down onto the planet, like, it all came back to me. And suddenly I'm like, oh god.
Yeah,
Mike,
yeah, you're like, oh,
this was the episode that you chose?
American,
really?
I didn't pick my favorite episode, to be clear. I think that, like, I wanted to pick an episode that was emblematic of Season 3, you know?
They're on their way out.
Yeah, you're not incorrect about...
It's not just on their way out. Like, it's not just a dip in quality. It's also, like, there's, like, an unhinged quality or just, like, a weirdness to Season 3 that I thought this somewhat highlighted.
There's also, I think, a... drop in subtlety in many ways. Not that the first two are like, you know, poems, but there's... It's less of a hammer over your head than something like the Paradise Syndrome.
Well, honestly, as we were watching it, like, I'll say off the bat, like, I don't hate this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's not the worst thing in the
no,
world.
No, I certainly don't love it, but, like, it wasn't, like, a slog to get through. It's like, if you know, yeah. It was funny in its badness, and as we were watching it, I did have the realization, like, you know what, I'm glad that Mike actually chose this one, because we shouldn't have picked all, like, bangers.
Exactly,
like,
There
had to have been one episode that we chose in this run, this limited run of original series reviews, where we talk about one of the stinkers.
I think if you're doing, like, Kirk is so often like a parody more than the real character in our culture, yeah. Like Zap Brannigan from Futurama, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think if you were to make a list of like episodes of Star Trek that started that, I think this would be up there. Like I think this is an important episode in that regard, yeah. Of like, this is why episodes like this are why Zap Brannigan
This is where a lot of people's less kind Kirk impressions come from. And it's funny that you you brought up the Zap Brannigan of it, Michael, because, or just of the Kirk of it all. I'm looking at the reception section of this episode, and in 2019, Nerdist included this episode on their Best of Kirk Binge Watching Guide, which is really mean to do, you know? To tell someone this is the best of
Sounds
Kirk.
Sounds like something the Nerdist would do.
In 2017...
Are they even relevant anymore?
You're right. In 2017, Screen Rant rated the love story between Kirk and Miramani as the sixth best love story in Star Trek, which again is just... Really? What? This is
out of six relationships that he's had throughout the show.
Yeah, it's a three-season show. Six best might be about right, Jackie.
Yeah, in this one, she's not an alien servant with questionable dynamics, so it's great.
She's a woman in red face.
Yeah, just that. And in 2015, Wired magazine suggested this episode was skippable in their binge-watching guide for the original series.
That's the first smart quote that we've heard all day.
The first honest review of receptions of this episode.
But yeah, like, just to be clear, before I'm like shipped off the store here, I picked this episode not because it's like my favorite episode.
You think it's the best of Kirk.
I just thought it would be like an interesting one to watch and talk about.
I think you're no, correct.
Yeah,
in
agreed.
That.
Yeah, totally agree. Oh, and by the way, I had to look it up, but. It was a harp. That was the name of the instrument I was trying to conjure.
Spock plays that little Vulcan harp.
But what I love is that it doesn't even come to play, because ultimately, well, I mean, I guess it does. He's like, yeah, it's like, well,
he just likes
it does,
his harp.
It does not, because like the way, spoiler alert at the end, the way that they figure out how to get into the obelisk or whatever it is like, it has to be a certain like, frequency of notes and like the whole episode, like, oh yeah, it's musical, but all it is Kirk saying hey Scotty, what's up, and he falls into the thing.
Yeah, when Kirk is first getting
basically
into
like
this
his
plot.
cell phone ringtone is the magical notes
but it doesn't happen until after he says Scotty, hey,
yeah,
and then he falls down.
Yeah, there's the little like, you know, technological as they do,
yeah.
But then he's just like Scotty up, whoa, and then he's gone.
Unless there's like a delay, maybe the suggestion is there's a delay on after the communicator beep.
It's an old piece of technology, I'm sure. His real mistake was once he got in there that he stood in the memory wipe zone.
Yeah,
he's not supposed to stand there. Yeah,
let's get in. Yeah, I know. Let's get into the plot of the Paradise Syndrome, Mike. This was your pick. What now? I know you haven't been sleeping for weeks either, much like Jackie. But try to remember the plot of the Paradise Syndrome.
So we start off with they're like checking out a planet because I think like are they there because the asteroid's going
to
hit it?
There is an asteroid en route to this planet that it seems has been, or you know, stuff has been deflected from this planet in the past, and so they're trying to figure out like why is that stopped
happening.
We're pretty
quickly like on a planet.
Yeah, it's the big three.
We have like
three guys.
Like a very stereotypical flute music.
Indicating a certain ethnic group.
Sweatiness that's going on. Anyway, yeah, basically.
We're on a beautiful alien planet that looks nothing at all like California.
Yeah, they're on Native American planet is basically where they are. Just generic. You know, I think they
it's so beautiful here.
They allude to them. I'm looking at as being Mohican, Navajo, and Delaware. I think Spock in one of his probably worst lines of the series.
The most peaceful of the tribes.
Yeah. No, I think he said most civilized.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
What they look like, I'd swear they're American Indians.
They are, Doctor. A mixture of Navajo, Mohican, and Delaware, I believe. All among the more advanced and peaceful tribes.
It's like discovering Atlantis. Or Shangri-La.
You know, the good Indians.
Were they Iroquois chopped liver, Spock? Anyway, he...
Not the bad
ones.
So
they're just like looking at this village and it's very peaceful.
But it doesn't seem to be indicative of a culture that could have built this, like the technology that they know.
They start looking
exists.
Like surely there must be more highly like evolved people.
Yeah, because these people are dummies. And
look,
but
they're living in
but
huts.
They're also commenting on like how it must be a peaceful life. And I think is this where Tahiti syndrome is dropped, which is basically the plot of the episode, which is just like I guess the idea that like World War II vets went to Tahiti and were like, this rules. And
it's really nice
leave.
Here.
And that was called like a disease.
And
they must have a disease. They don't want to live in America.
They don't want to come back to
what
America.
What sickness is this?
Where it sucks.
What's the matter, Jim?
What? Oh, nothing. Just so peaceful. Uncomplicated. No problems. No command decisions. Just living.
Typical human reaction to an idyllic natural setting. Back in the 20th century, we referred to it as the Tahiti syndrome. It's particularly common to overpressured leader types like starship captains.
Tahiti syndrome.
But so they, while like they're just kind of checking it out, Kirk falls into...
He falls in a hole.
Like that.
Well, he stupidly is just like, you guys go over there. I'm going to check out this obelisk and
just
bask in my Tahiti syndrome even longer.
He's just like, feel the wind on my face. Ah, what a nice obelisk.
Yeah.
Hey, Scotty, what's up? And then he's gone. And they're like, where'd he go?
As you said, yeah, he falls down and he like kind of like gets up like groggily and like just manages to hit a few buttons in a certain way. And then, as you said, activates what apparently the only function is a memory wiper.
Yeah, I think it's like... Kirk, this is before even like the credits. I think this is our cold open,
yeah.
But it's
yeah.
like
yeah.
Kirk
it's a good cold open.
Is like stand his arms are up in the air and the memory wipe gets him, and it's a classic TOS. Like I don't know, Shatner just like strike a pose.
Well, it's like. This, yeah, again, like you mentioned earlier that like this episode really informs a lot of like the stereotypes of what Kirk is and rough acting. This is one of them. Like this falls under the rough Shatner acting,
yeah.
Like when he's like,
And I think we've all said it before. He can be a very good actor. He can be very effective and emotional. And this is not one of those examples.
He's really good.
Hammy Shatner.
I think he tends to be good when he's like given clear direction.
Yeah.
And like reading from dialogue.
Reading a good script.
But I think in his defense, you know, when he's put in a room with a bunch of cardboard and said,
cardboard
okay,
and lights.
Your memory is being wiped. And go.
Go, Bill.
I think understandably he's not
doing
the best.
He's having fun with it, or one hopes. But
Yeah, this is one where, like, yeah, sure, I'll do the scene. Can I have some... have some of my flasks first?
Yeah,
like,
do we have any pet pills around
pet
or
pills,
what?
Yeah. It's the 60s. Let's do this.
Let's have some fun.
So he disappears to Bones and Spock. They don't know where
he
went.
Yeah, so
like,
basically from
now.
Bones and Spock's perspective, they're like, Kirk is trapped here. And so there's like this argument where Bones is like, we got to figure out a way to get him out. And Spock is like, actually, we got to divert the asteroid. And this is like, this little bit is probably one of the best, like, actually good, like, moments, I think, in this episode is, like, the back and forth here between Spock and Bones of, like, what to do now.
Yeah. This reminded me of, like, Interstellar to a degree.
Yeah. Hey.
When he explains the asteroid, he's like, Doctor, imagine this rock is the asteroid. This is us.
And the time it's taken
to explain this situation, the asteroid is now here. And he moves the rock closer.
Yeah, Spock's argument is that, like, the more time we spend looking for Kirk right now, like, the more dangerous the asteroid gets. But if we go, like, deal with that now, we can come back and find Kirk. And so ultimately they go for that. But that is also, it's one of those, you know, the writing from episode to episode, big writer's room, lots of people involved, but it is funny how, like, sometimes the Spock writing will be, like, you know, logical, but we can see that beating heart underneath, and, as we just talked about last time with Amok's time, the Spock cares very deeply for Kirk, we know this, and then there's an episode like this where he's like, yeah, we'll come back, that's fine.
Well, but no, I am totally on Spock's side. It's just like, well, what? It's like, it's Kirk's life for the entire life of this planet. Yeah. It's like, you know, and honestly, I kind of hated McCoy in this entire, well, not through the entire episode, he comes around, but for a majority of this episode, I was honestly thinking, like, shut up, Bones.
Spock was like one step away in this conversation from, like, getting out a piece of paper and then folding it and then sticking the pencil through the paper. But yeah, I feel like Spock has like a good moment where he's like making a good point in this, which is why I like this, where he's like, okay, Bones, like, I know you want to get Kirk out, but if the asteroid comes, the whole planet's dead, including Kirk.
Yeah.
Like, he's on the planet
too. Well, it's almost
too.
Like, he almost has to explain it so bluntly to the, because McCoy's just, he's like, well, because McCoy just doesn't freaking get
because
it.
Because he's
like,
so emotional.
He's emotional.
I wanted
and
Spock to be like,
logical.
Okay, like, I wanted Spock to take a rock and a grapefruit. And I wanted Spock to put the grapefruit on the ground. I was like, okay, imagine this is the planet, right? And this rock is the asteroid. Here's what happens.
Spock, where did you get that grapefruit?
And then he smashes the grapefruit with the rock. It's like, get it?
Good God, man.
Cuts to Bones and he's like covered in grapefruit juice.
I don't get it.
Yes. Like, I just didn't understand. Like, that's how stupid Bones was being in this episode. Like, what do you think is going to happen? It's the life of our captain versus the life of an entire planet.
That is also one of the aspects of
But an entire planet of not white people, Dave.
Well, that's
come on. It's like, it's not an abstract thing we're talking about here. It's literally the life of one man versus an entire planet. Yeah. And a big rock is going to rock the size of the moon, they say, Earth's moon, is going to burst into this planet. And it's just like, you can't, Bones,
and it's
you can't,
not like,
I know you're
and
being
it's not like Kirk
right
is
now.
Like, Kirk is in, like, they hear his muffled screams or anything.
No.
Like, they don't know what's going on. For all they know, he's perfectly fine.
It seems like it should be easier to locate your captain, though. Like,
well,
if he goes missing.
This whole thing gets into the, and I was kind of questioning this, like, this is a Prime Directive episode, as they would say. And it got me wondering, like, wait a minute, like, this is season 3. Was the Prime Directive brought up? Because it seems like if it had been by this point, someone would have said, like, so we're clearly violating the Prime Directive, right? By Kirk saying, like, hey, let's take it. We got 30 minutes, right, before this world is destroyed. Let's take a look at the Indians
they
or whatever.
They did not care.
And I can say, according to Wikipedia, Chattopedia, excuse me, the first reference to the Prime Directive was in the first season of the original series, an episode, The Return of the Archons.
They don't care.
They don't care. Like, I'm shocked. Like, well, there's several things, problems with this, where it's just like, why is Kirk there at all? You know, like, they shouldn't, like, this.
No, it's the kind of TOS plot that does rely on, like, someone has to be an idiot or someone has to, yes, you know, forget that they're, that they work for Starfleet and probably have for many years and... I forget what they do there.
Well, there's no reason. Well, I suppose the reason they beam down to the planet in the first place is to see, because they assumed that there was something with or on this planet
with
that
technology,
was able to
with
technology to divert the things, and something happened, and that's not happening anymore. I guess that's why they go down there, but they take no measures to hide themselves.
No.
At all. They're just walking around in their brightly colored outfits.
They're like across the river from, like, the tribe, and they're just like,
in full view. That shocked me. In full view, anyone could have looked and be like, "Hey, who are those people
over
there?
Who are those guys?
Crazy colored outfits." It's like, it's nuts.
Where did they come from?
Like, Kirk is just sitting, like, he's, like, leaning against his tree, like, wow, look at that. And he's, like, playing with this branch.
Okay,
you know?
I love
that. Oh, that branch thing was great.
That was some great prop work by Shatner.
The way he tosses it aside.
But it's, like, no care is given by Kirk, Spock, and McCoy to hide themselves. It's so insane. And again, it gets into why I think Picard is the superior captain. He wouldn't have been there in the first place to run into this issue.
And well, Picard, we're doing cowboy
like,
diplomacy.
So, Spock, you're telling me we got 30 minutes until we got to get out of here and get to the rally point or
this
whatever
episode
it is. Like,
is.
We can look around.
This episode is basically redone in TNG as one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever. Was it like Only a Northern Song or something? Or that's the Beatles song. Like the one with the flute. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, with the when he's on the planet?
Yeah.
When he lives a life?
Lives a life.
The Inner Light, I think.
Inner Light, yeah. That's the other Beatles song.
Yeah, I guess I guess that is the logical, yeah, kind of extension of this plot of, but he has his memory.
Because we haven't gotten to the main plot of this or the main thing. So we've basically just described the cold open, and what happens is Spock and Bones go back to do the B plot, which is to stop the asteroid, which is, I don't know, kind of the more boring part of the show, I think. But then
involves a lot of staring at an obelisk.
Yeah, the A plot is Kirk. It turns out this pillar was basically just a memory wipe in a revolving door, essentially. And he spit out the back and into this society that they were like spying on. And welcomed as a god.
Yeah, they immediately are like, well, you came out of the obelisk and you're wearing weird clothes and you're hot, so I guess you're a god.
And because he knows like CPR or whatever and saves like a little kid who's drowning. And
I love that moment. He's like, you are now the medical guy. Like, give him your badge.
And,
give him your badge.
So then it's just like him living here and basically like loving the non-captain life, you know, and
even though like
getting the Tahiti
you are
syndrome.
Still given a lot of responsibility here in this quote unquote like peaceful, you know, relaxing world. It's like if you were the medicine man, you'd still have a lot of work ahead of you, and you can't just do CPR on everyone. we get a lot more interactions with performers that I would hazard to guess are not indigenous.
Hazard to guess? They're definitely not.
That's, you know.
I will say, so
I have a lot of Italians in the room, I'm sure.
The woman who played Mira Mani is Sabrina Scharf Schiller, who, you know, I don't know, I'm not doing a DNA test, but she looks very white.
Do you think she's of European descent?
Sabrina Schiller, I don't know if is a member of any, nation. But she, just throw it out there, I just was, like, curious, and, like, she has an interesting background. She was a Playboy bunny. She was in the movie Easy Rider. I don't think it's, like, a main character, but she was in it. Of course she did this, and she eventually like went on to be an anti-pollution activist. She ran for the Senate. And basically she settled into being a real estate lawyer in LA. And she has, I well, who knows what's going on, but the records don't show her death date, so I think she's, you know, for all intents and purposes, has been alive. But yeah, she interesting.
That's a hell of a life and a trajectory.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I feel like Sabrina Schiller is probably interesting. I would, you know, love to have her on the show sometime.
It's not her fault that she was cast in this role.
Well, that's basically the plot. Like, we gotta leave Jim. We gotta divert this asteroid. And oh crap! Like, we burned up all of our phasers. This and that. Like, we're screwed. Like, all right. Well, let's go back to the planet and try to figure out that obelisk thing. Like, Spock's, and this is one of the more interesting things I thought about this episode. Like, in the B plot, they spend up all their energy like trying to divert the. Trying to divert it with the deflector. Then they try to just simply blow it up with the phasers, mm-hmm. like cut it in half. None of that works. The phasers are burned out. And Scotty is like,
I'm giving
her
all.
Basically, like, killing his child by doing this, you would think.
It's a great Scotty classic. Like, I'm giving her all she's got, Captain. She can't take no more.
Deflection point -7.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The relays will reject the overload, Mr. Spock.
Then bypass the relays, go to manual control.
Do that, we'll burn out the engines.
I want full power, Mr. Scott.
Aye, sir. All right, you lovelies. Hold together. Full power, Mr. Spock.
Well, it's like, yeah, you get the sense that like the Enterprise is like a dog and Scotty is being forced to like pull the choke chain. He's like, I can't do it, don't make me do it, like, oh no.
And then Spock's just sitting there with like his fingers steepled, like, do it again, Mr. Scott.
Yes. And I kind of felt for Scotty in this. He's like, we can't keep doing warp 9. This is insane.
Do
and,
it like, again.
Yeah, it's like, again, like, noted, Scotty. Yes, your objection is noted. And you just see the red, like, you know red is bad.
Yeah, it's just flashing in the back.
Flashing in the background, and it completely blows out, and then they have to rely, they're basically like, all right, we can get ahead of the planet, or we can get to the planet about 4 hours sooner than the asteroid on impulse power. In the meantime, it's going to be literally like 2 months before we get back there. So I'm going to, like Spock says, I'm going to like basically just stay awake for weeks and try to decode.
It's fine. Vulcans don't need to sleep or eat. It's totally fine. And I'm normal and I'm doing good.
That was kind of interesting. And really, he doesn't seem really the worse for wear. I mean, clearly he's like, he feels a little bit of guilt. McCoy points it out to him, but like, it's not like he's acting the way he did in the previous episode we watched, where he's like throwing soup against the wall or anything.
Well, he's not horny, so.
Oh, well, he's not horny, yeah. But apparently, yeah. But I love that moment where McCoy's just like, you have to rest. Like, you know, even if it's for a little bit. And he's like, do I have to call security? He leaves the room, and like, Spock's like, all right. He gets into his bed, and it's like a child would. As soon as McCoy leaves the room, Spock just lifts his head and like, all right, back to my
back
computer
to my
monitor.
Grind. I've got games to play, McCoy.
Yes. Like, he puts his headset on. It's like, sorry, guys, my mom came in the room. All right, I'm back.
All right, I'm back. Where were we? Oh, yeah, the obelisk.
Yes.
I love episodes where Spock is like acting captain, and immediately everyone is just like, what the fuck, man? I hate this.
Dude, well, it got me thinking, like, the whole B plot when they're trying to like divert the asteroid. My whole thinking was like, why is McCoy ever on the bridge unless there's a medical emergency?
He just likes hanging out.
What purpose does he serve there?
He's a bud.
He's like, this episode really made me mad at McCoy. I was like, get
this
the hell
did.
Off
I,
the bridge.
This is not something that stood out to me. I didn't realize. Is McCoy your Riker?
Don't say
well,
that.
No, it's like, I feel like McCoy's role when he's on the bridge, at least, is basically like, I don't know, emotional support for Kirk, or sometimes he's like the voice, like, you know, like Kirk needs like a you know, basically like emotional support. Like, that seems to be his role when he's on the bridge. But when it's Spock in command, you have no place on the bridge, McCoy. Get the hell out of here.
Just likes to show up and bother people.
Yes, it's like emotional unsupport when it's not Kirk. It's
emotional
like
distress.
he serves no purpose, and it's just like, get the hell out of here. The only thing you're doing is like criticizing every decision I make.
Yeah, sometimes you need that in a homie on the bridge.
But in this episode, it serves, it's only a distraction. There's no positive here. Like I said before, eventually he comes around. He's like, okay, like, you know what? You were right before, like, Jim would have made the exact same decision. But, like, it got me wondering, like, McCoy is, like, the most emotional. He's probably the most emotional character on the show, I would say. Like prone to, like, I don't care about the entire planet of people are going to get wiped out. My friend care. Jim, you know?
Jim.
Yeah, you know how humans are.
I mean, he's supposed to be the contrast to Spock, Dave.
No, I get that. I get his, like...
You don't like a man expressing his emotions? What's the problem here?
No. I get his, like, his role as it pertains to, like, the other characters, mainly Kirk and Spock, like, the foil. He's the foil. But, like, I was just thinking, like, it just shown more clearly in this episode, like, the fact that when you set that aside, he has no
reason. He's just some guy who shouldn't be there.
He's just a guy that shouldn't be there.
No, picturing, like, while he's bitching out Spock on the bridge, there's, like, crew members with broken legs or burns or whatever, like, in the...
Yes.
Waiting treatment.
There's, like, a guy, like, in, like, the med bay, just, like, looking at his watch, like, my physical therapist was supposed to get here an hour ago. Dr. McCoy, where the hell
where
is he?
Should I... come back?
I imagine, like, Nurse Chapel is just, like, you know, like, you know, like, overwhelmed, like, god damn it, he overbooked us again. Where the hell
where
is
the
he?
Hell is
god,
he?
You know the wait times for Bones on the on the Enterprise? It's ridiculous.
Where is the
you
doctor?
Always book you, they book you for one, but you might as well not show up until two.
Yeah.
I know.
Everyone knows.
Honestly, like, Nurse Chapel is really the doctor of the ship. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. She's the only one that's actually there all the time. Bones is
getting
basically...
soup thrown at her.
Yeah, but basically, Bones is, like, the doctor who's always on the golf course. But in this case, he's always on the bridge just, like, chatting it up with his buddy Jim.
He's just chilling.
All right, guys,
with the
what
boys.
Are we doing up here on the bridge where I'm needed?
Where I hang out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, meanwhile, Kirk is living it up in this very paternalistic view of indigenous life. It's just so peaceful. They're so docile.
Until it gets windy.
Oh, man. The storm or whatever that's going on in this is really something. That is 100%, like, they're trying to portray as, like, this natural disaster, and it is definitely a dude off-screen with a leaf blower.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It's really scary, guys.
Well, it got me thinking, like, so wait, they seem to posit, like, the people there that, like, when it gets windy, that means that, like, an earthquake or something is about to come. I'm like... really? Does it just never get windy there? Like,
I think in universe it's meant to be more than just windy. I think they're, like, trying to portray, like, the sky is
okay.
falling
so this
or something.
Really, it's just a limitation of the budget that isn't conveying.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they'd sure like it if it looked like a big scary storm, but we gotta wrap this episode in 3 days. So.
Yeah.
One thing that
we don't have we don't have a permit to film here. The forest rangers are on our ass.
Oh yeah, no, we're at a park. They would like us to hurry it up. We have to move our cardboard obelisk after this.
I do think it's interesting. Well, like, this is meant to take place over
like a 2 months,
a couple months,
right?
Yes.
That is interesting.
And you can tell because Kirk grows out his future sideburns into
oh my god
fluffy natural
yes.
ones.
He gets hippie sideburns.
Well, were those real? I thought those.
Those
were
looked
fake.
Like some patches
some
that they slapped
yeah.
on his face. But it is. It's one of those. I always forget about the Star Trek sideburn until it's changed in some way, and then you're like, oh yeah. It's effective. You know, subtle makeup. You know. Hair, whatever, grooming.
It is kind of funny. Like, Kirk, like, doesn't get his memory back until the end when Spock mind melds with him. But until that time, like, you know, he remembers things like irrigation. He remembers how to build a lamp.
He knows that he came from the sky in some way.
Yeah, he's like, I keep having these dreams with these people and these faces and
And Miramani's like, aw.
Each time your arms hold me is as joyous as the first.
I'm happy. I'm so happy. If it weren't for the dreams, my mind would be completely at peace.
I thought you no longer had the dreams. That you no longer saw the strange lodge which moves through the sky.
They've come back. They were gone for a while, but they've come back. And I see faces, too, very dim. I feel I should know them. I feel my place is with them, not here. I don't deserve this happiness.
Yeah, I love that part of the Tahiti syndrome is literally frolicking. Yeah. Like, there's a couple scenes of frolicking in the woods.
Well, you know, what else do you do with your days?
And like, there's some, like, startling things that this episode has that, like, aren't really resolved. Like, for instance, a big one, Minari, or is that her name?
Am I
pronouncing
that Miramani.
Correctly? Miramani has his child, or she's pregnant with Kirok's child.
Wait, what? I missed that.
She's pregnant or something.
Does she have a kid?
She doesn't have
the kid. She doesn't have it. She's pregnant, but the suggestion is, I think, at the end of the episode,
she dies.
So basically, he gets Wendy, and everyone's like, you're no god. Like, you're not doing anything.
You're not stopping the storm. So they try to start,
he goes to the obelisk and is like, I'm not Kira. I stop it.
I don't know what to do. And then they try to stone him and Miramani because she won't leave him. And then maybe when Bones heals her wounds, he just kind of
I don't know if he does or not. That's kind of the weird thing. It's sort of up in the air. They get a light stoning apparently by what looked like rubber rocks.
Well, yeah.
But that's the thing. They get stoned. And then Spock and McCoy come down. They do the mind meld. They figure out how to get in. You know, he's like, well, what did I say before? I went beep, 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 beep. And I went, Scotty, hey. Oh, okay, there we go. We're back in. And it worked. But the suggestion seems to be that I think Minari dies.
Yeah, I think that is true. Well, when you get stoned with rubber, with a handful of rubber rocks... It causes a lot of internal injuries, and she's dead, but at least that means that Kirk doesn't have to pay child support or come
back
and see
her. I was thinking, like, how are they going to explain this away where, you know, because they said she had a baby. That's a pretty big twist. You know,
yeah. The next episode is like he's bitching about his child support to Spock and Bones.
And they don't even have money on that planet. We don't have money, so what's all the point? What are we doing here?
How did this happen? Why am I giving half of my?
She basically does that thing where she, you know, she's like, I love you, and she does the Yoda death.
Yeah, she basically, you know, lays back with like her tongue sticking out and X's over her eyes.
She's just
dead.
Another peg up for Kirk. He's just like, all right, well, lost another one. No big deal. You know, this is like my sixth best romance I've ever
had. Yeah, this is only the sixth one, the top six.
But that's the episode. And it's just, and also, there's another interesting thing that this episode posits, or not posits, just flat out brings up. They're like, who left this obelisk? Like, why is it that?
Yeah,
like,
this is a very kind of last minute explanation they give for why there are so many humanoid species, like just random planets with humans on them.
The preservers.
I think like the implication is like when the white people came to Americas and the Native Americans were like the various tribes were dying out and being murdered, that these aliens came and took some of them
and
resettled
them
in different planets so that their existence would continue. and apparently they settled them in like Asteroid Central because it was like necessary as part of this to build an asteroid defense machine, which doesn't seem like a necessary thing in a normal planet.
Well, it all just kind of wraps back up in this very like well-intentioned but like paternalistic, like insulting, you know, like, oh well, they just wanted to rescue the poor people, and so that's why they put him here. And it's like, who, why, what, when?
I don't even know if I would say this is well-intentioned. I think what this is what outfits do we have in the Paramount town? A lot. Like, oh, we got a lot of the what they would probably describe as the cowboy and Indian set.
I would say well-intentioned in that it's a point in time, obviously, you know, in the 60s where there's a lot of social change and civil rights. And in 1968, when this episode was made, it was the same year that the American Indian movement began as well. And
I don't think there was a lot going on in 1968. I think that was a pretty low-key year.
There was a... Oh, you're being sarcastic. shut up. But well, specifically, I was looking up, what was happening with, like, indigenous groups and civil rights at that time, because there was, again, lots going on. So I think it is coming from this sort of turning point in time where we're not doing... we're doing less of cowboys and Indians where it's like our hero cowboy gets attacked by that evil tribe, you know, they're circling the wagon, they're so violent, but we're not quite at a point where it's like, let's view indigenous people as like full humans with histories and et cetera. So it instead of being like, well, they're the bad guys, be like, no, they're good guys, and they're so peaceful and nice. And it's like, you're still denying personhood, even if it's coming from a like, no, we like them now. And obviously, the United States past this point would have a lot of, you know, still issues with treating indigenous people as people. But, you know, Star Trek... They take their swings, and sometimes it's a little bit better than others. So
this one again, like the questions I have are like the preserve is such a big idea, and it's also like, I thought you brought up a good point, Mike. It's like, why put them on this planet that apparently is right in the path of a bunch of asteroids or whatever? And it's just like, all right, no big deal. We'll put a giant obelisk with this big deflector that'll shoot it off. The only problem is, apparently they tell, like, one of the people, like the medicine man in this tribe, all right, so here's how you do it. You go out, you go into the thing, you press a button, and it's all good, okay? Now you got to tell all your sons, your descendants, like, for the end of
just
time.
Just make sure you do this. It's fine.
Make sure you do that. And evidently, the medicine man in the tribe, his dad... wanted to wait before he told him the secret. He died before he could. Like, I want him to be a little older before I tell him the world-saving secret.
Sorry, that's why Salish is so angry.
Come of age before.
That's why Salish, the medicine man, is so angry at Kirk the whole time. Not just because he's some rando who stole his girlfriend and his job and...
his betrothed.
His betrothed.
Like, she doesn't even really like him, right?
No, but it's also because his father failed him. He was not given the information he needed. And, you know, Salish is a victim here, too.
It does make me laugh, though, that the whole thing is like, oh, yeah, you just need someone to go down there and press a single button, and all's well.
That'll be fine. It's fine. But it's like, sorry, where are these preservers now? Will we
Did
ever
they
meet
die
them?
Off?
No.
It's a big, big, like, universe-changing question, you know, like, this idea of the preservers that is just sort of, like, casually thrown out there.
Well, and it seems to exist entirely so that there's an answer to, like, how come there's so many, like, humans randomly in this universe? And it's like, well, because we're making a TV show. and we're humans.
They kind of revisit this in TNG. Like, I don't remember the name of the episode, but there's, like, this big, like, archaeological hunt where, like, oh, we found all these clues that suggest, like, hey, there's, all the species in the galaxy have, like, this common ancestor or something. And they follow all these clues, and ultimately they find out, like, there is a race of like, There was a species that, like, put their DNA in a bunch of different places in the hopes that, like, you know, all of these people in the galaxy would come together and realize that they were one. You know what I mean? That they weren't so different or whatever. And, like, it makes me wonder if that species that they show in TNG was the Preservers that they speak of in this episode. Who knows? Maybe. But they kind of do touch on this again in TNG. And again, even that one's not a great episode.
You think they remembered this episode?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure.
Do you
think, like, the TNG writers, like, remembered this episode?
Oh, I gotta say so, yeah.
I think there's you know, the through lines and the various, like, oh, they you know, sparked this, you know, back in the original series. Should we pick that up? Or, like, should we do something with that? Or, like...
So well, and I think that, if I'm not mistaken, this was, like, a season 6 or 7 episode of TNG. So, like, much like season 3 here for TOS, like,
running out of steam.
We're running out of ideas here, guys. Like, what do we got?
What kind of stuff can we play with?
Exactly. Well, any other closing thoughts on the Paradise?
I mean, I want to mention Jackie made a joke about, like, the outdoor scenes being filmed in a couple days. And maybe you saw this too, Jackie, but, like, The outdoor stuff was filmed in the Upper Franklin Canyon Reservoir, which is just, like, a municipal park in Los Angeles.
California, yeah.
And it was, like, filmed over 2 days, January or June.
Like, I get the sense that, like, if the camera had zoomed out just a little bit, you would have seen, like, the picnic stands.
Yeah, someone was, like, grilling just off for a birthday party.
They had PAs, yeah, just, like, scooching some picnic tables just out of frame.
You would have seen, like, a big Smokey the Bear, like, ad somewhere, like, on a sign.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Someone's like, yeah, there's a bunch of people fishing just down the river.
I'll take 2 days in the California, you know, municipal park over, you know, hours and hours in the volume.
That was, you know, honestly, I agree, because it was refreshing seeing them film in a location, because oftentimes, you know, Star Trek was such a low budget show. Well, it was both a high and low budget show simultaneously. Yeah.
Best of both worlds,
but,
baby.
You know, we got a location on film, you know, looks there's
and it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, Star Trek is the original series is so interesting. I like it feels like it's high and low budget. Like, it feels to me, I think, like, the way it plays to me as, like, a modern viewer is, like, compared to other shows, you know, that are more contemporary or more recent, like 2020 shows, it definitely looks better than The Volume. And it is, like, it's shot on, like, 35 millimeter film. Like, it's like, so there's something about that that, like, is always going to look
cinematic.
Yes, it's cinematic. But at the same time, there's things that look cheap about it, but I feel like it comes across to me as, like, a well shot, like, stage play or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was even, actually, I noticed at the beginning, all this is not on the location. This was when Kirk is getting his memory wiped, but he's like walking back at, like, you know, stumbling, confused, walking out of the obelisk, and, like, the camera behind him, and it's, like, kind of shaky, and I'm like, ooh, okay, shaky cam. Like, there's some effective, you know, filmmaking in this episode, along with some, you know, brown face and et cetera.
Yeah, but ultimately, by the end, even though this isn't a great episode, I had a fun time watching it. Like, it was fun to see those things that would pop up that would become emblematic of the Kirk character, at least stereotypically in culture. Like, I had forgotten about the Q-Rock line. That made me laugh. Like, that moment when he just kind of hugs himself, like, I love me. You know? Like, there's a lot of funny stuff with this episode.
That's
true. And honestly, even though I wouldn't say it's good, like, it's not a bad watch. Like, I wasn't having a bad time watching this. What about you guys?
I had a fine time, you know. Yeah. I've had better. I've had worse.
I think, like, I think, like, the stuff with the asteroid does, like, feel a little B-plot-ish. Like,
yeah.
That was kind of my, as far as, like, bored, that was, like, the more boring parts. But the rest of it is, like, I have to say good, but it's like, it's one of those things, like, you can't look away.
It's like, if we're getting into recommendations, I kind of would recommend this episode, if only, like I said, it's fun to see those Kirkisms And it's just sort of like, yeah, I think you put it perfectly. Like, it's hard to look away.
I feel like it's a very 1968 episode, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, there's definitely, yeah. I think, something that's maybe going over our heads a bit, or maybe not over our heads, but we're just not talking about it as much, is like, this. There's an element here, I think, of like, the U.S. hippie movement that's going on, like the fetishization of like indigenous cultures or whatever, which is like, you know, that, you know, the Tahiti syndrome, or just the like him growing out his big ass sideburns and like that is a like there this feels like it wasn't written by Roddenberry, but it feels like a very Roddenberry is, you know, because he was famously really into free sex and all that stuff.
Yeah.
This feels like I could feel that influence in of Roddenberry in this episode. So it's like interesting from that point of view. I don't know if I'd recommend it or not. Like, it's, there's so many more better episodes of the original series.
Definitely.
Like, I don't think there's anything from season three I would recommend over anything from season one, you know? But it is, I think if you want like a time capsule of like 68, I would recommend it. It's certainly not like awful. Like, you know, like it is watchable. It's a very watchable episode. There's definitely like moments where you're going to want to look at your phone or something, but like for the most part, it's like an engaging episode. Looks decent. Has some like weird stuff going on that makes it interesting. So I don't know. It's a tough one to like rate.
What about you, Jackie?
I probably would not recommend this one, but I appreciate what you have both said. It's, you know, like I said, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but I would tend to agree with the 2015 Wired suggestion of this being a skippable episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather
if anything,
than...
I would say this is a weak recommend.
If I were to, like, curate... like a night of Star Trek viewing for someone who like hasn't seen the original series, this would not be on the list.
This wouldn't make the cut. I disagree with the 2019 Nerdist, you know, statement of this being the best of Kirk. It is not.
That is wild.
This is a,
yeah, that's a wild thing.
How get my friend Kirk's name out of your mouth.
This is not Kirk at his best, but it is. I do think maybe there's an element to like, if you want to understand the cultural icon that is Kirk, maybe there's an argument to put this on the list.
Yeah.
It's not Kirk's finest captaining.
No.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mike. You mentioned Kirk's captaining, because when the Trek cast returns, we'll be going back to season one, episode 14, with one of the better known and better regarded episodes of Star Trek, which features heavily Kirk's excellent command skills on the bridge. When we return, we will be discussing Balance of Terror. I am Kirok!